It is Monday, November the 13th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up on the sidelines of an Asia summit, President Putin says Russia did not interfere in U.S. election.
And not think that we're going to get him to do what we want because we're, you know, just saying he didn't do it when just about everyone else in the world seems to think they did.
Also ahead, Philippines president hosting an ASEAN meeting.
This is really the chance for President Duterte to come out in the international scene.
Powerful earthquakes in the Middle East and Central Asia, plus the music of Lionel Richie. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. On Sunday, President Trump spoke during a news conference in Hanoi about allegations Russia meddled in last year's U.S. election. In some ways, Mr. Trump says he favors the assessments from the U.S. intelligence community that Moscow did interfere in the election. Russian President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly denied Russia had anything to do with Mr. Trump's win or the election in general.
I believe that President Putin really feels, and he feels strongly, that he did not meddle in our election. What he believes is what he believes. What I believe is that we have to get to work, and I think everybody understood this that heard the answer. We have to get to work to solve Syria, to solve North Korea, to solve Ukraine, to solve terrorism.
VOA's Victor Beatty asked University of Denver Russia scholar Jonathan Edelman if Russia's help is truly needed to accomplish these goals.
Certainly Russia could help. I mean, there's no doubt. The Russians made all the difference in Syria. If you remember back 6 years ago when all this started, people, including myself, thought they're not going to last. Bashar Assad is finished. And so there's no question that the Russians are important, although I would say not as much for North Korea. But I think the broader point is that from what we know, and that's only what's kind of publicly known right now, the agencies are much more, except for one, I believe, are much more dubious of what the Russians are trying to do. And not simply perhaps to Donald Trump, but also perhaps to Hillary Clinton. So I think there's a gap there between what we seem to think most of the intelligence, of which we have 17 agencies, think, and what the president thinks.
Former CIA Director John Brennan and former National Intelligence Director James Clapper both said the president was mishandling Moscow ties, even as the special counsel investigates possible collusion between Mr. Trump's campaign and Russia. Mr. Brennan, quote, "I think Mr. Trump is, for whatever reason, either intimidated by Mr. Putin, afraid of what he could do, or what might come out as a result of these investigations. It's either naivete, ignorance, or fear in terms of what Mr. Trump is doing vis-a-vis the Russians." Mr. Clapper said, "I do think both the Chinese and Russians think they can play him," referring to Mr. Trump.
I'd have to agree with most of that. I'm actually puzzled why the president, at a time when the Mueller investigation is still ongoing, and he's insisting that he had, you know, that they did nothing at all, then he would come out and endorse basically the Putin position. I'm not saying that Vladimir Putin doesn't want to make a deal. In fact, I just wrote an op-ed that dealt with the extent to which he might be willing to make a deal in some of those areas. But to deal with the Russians, you have to deal firmly. You have to remember they were a superpower, and now they've lost, but they have 7,000 nuclear weapons. And the world is going, what's really amazing, in a bad sense, is that the world is going much more in the authoritarian direction that Russia is going, kind of non-communist, authoritarian, strong religiosity, and so forth. And so given all of that, the Russians feel that they are on a winning streak. I mean, whether it's Crimea, or it's West Ukraine, or it's, you know, Abkhazia and southern Ossetia and now Syria, and to seem to just allow what they say to go unchallenged, that I find a little odd. I'm not certain what his motivation is in that. It's bad politics, to put it. If you're a Republican, that is bad politics.
Are we ever going to get to the bottom of this collusion issue?
Maybe and maybe not. I was just reading something interesting about that, which said that we will get somewhere. But since there's problems with Mueller and Comey and others in their personal history, we may never know everything. I mean, just think about JFK and the assassination. Here we are 50 years later, and some papers are still being withheld. So I think we'll know something, I think most people, most analysts would argue that the Russians did try to collude with both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, and, you know, using the internet made some headway. So, and you know, they're not the only ones to do that. The internet is used extensively for this by a wide variety of people. So I think that it's bad politics on the part of the president in multiple ways. In other words, it doesn't help his bargaining position with Vladimir Putin, you know, who after all worked for the intelligence agencies for a number of years in East Germany. So he's used to being told the truth in a hard way and understanding that that's just the first way that you begin a bargaining, if there is going to be one.
The Kremlin also said Sunday that inflexibility on the part of the U.S. was to blame for the lack of a bilateral meeting between Russia's President Putin and Mr. Trump during a summit in Vietnam. Is it important for these two to get together in some sort of formal meeting?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, given that the Russians in some areas are still a major power, and the other countries like China are going to have another 20 to 40 years, we don't have to agree, but we should be able to talk to them over situations that are important. For example, are the Russians going to join in some kind of alliance with Turkey and with the Islamic Republic of Iran, as is being mooted in many places? We need to know that, because that would influence American foreign policy. So can't leave them out. They're still the number two power in the world. The EU has faded away in many areas, and the Chinese have a long way to go. So I think just for ourselves, we should. But we've got to be tough. We've got to be hard. We've got to be realistic. And that's what Putin is. So if we want to be understood as serious, we have to ironically adopt some of that and not think that we're going to get him to do what we want because we're, you know, just saying he didn't do it when just about everyone else in the world seems to think they did.
Jonathan Edelman is a professor in the Corbell School of International Studies. That's at the University of Denver. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Analysts are saying that human rights issues and concerns about extrajudicial killings, including alleged vigilante attacks on drug suppliers and users, likely will not come up as President Trump meets Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte. Mr. Duterte has said many times his plan to do away with drug use in the country is being handled within the confines of the law. We asked Australian National University and Asia Foundation scholar Stephen Rood if the Filipino people are as concerned about drug use as their president.
Well, there is general support among the Philippine populace about trying to stamp out the drug problem, because it is indeed, particularly in the cities, quite a vicious problem. So when asked if they approve of the president's war on drugs, they tend to say that they do indeed support it. However, there is growing concern about the fact that so many people are killed in the course of that war, and that concern has been growing. So in the end, if that's the only way that the drug war is being fought, it could undercut support for it.
Nearly 4,000 people have died since the drug crackdown began, just after President Duterte took office a little more than a year ago.
Well, in fact, 4,000 is the number that the police count as having been killed in their operations, and there's an approximately equivalent number who've been killed in considerably more murky circumstances. So we are talking about thousands of people who have been killed. And the average Filipino would like to see anybody charged with such a crime face trial rather than being summarily slain.
President Trump is in the Philippines for the East Asia Summit and a meeting of ASEAN. We asked Dr. Root about the significance of the ASEAN meeting to Mr. Duterte.
This is really the chance for President Duterte to come out in the international scene. I mean, he's been president for more than a year, but his performance at previous international meetings has been somewhat sporadic, missing dinners and skipping meetings and the like, whereas here he is the host for all the world's leaders and has a chance to demonstrate his more congenial side.
Also, President Duterte has said the South China Sea disputes likely won't make it to the agenda at the ASEAN meeting. He says it's better left untouched, even though President Trump has offered to mediate those disputes.
Well, indeed. In fact, there's a couple of different perspectives on this. The United States' clear objective is to ensure freedom of navigation and not to take any particular position on who owns those areas. Whereas what President Duterte is saying is he's not going to insist on answering the question of who owns the different islands and shoals and the like, as long as he is able to get both Philippine fishermen access to those waters and Chinese investment in the Philippines.
President Trump and Mr. Duterte, two of the 17 heads of state in Manila for talks likely to largely focus on North Korea's nuclear and missile agenda.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News.
Very strong earthquake has struck in the Middle East. Iranian state media reporting more than 130 fatalities so far, hundreds more injured. Many houses in rural areas are made of mud bricks and have easily crumbled with this quake. VOA's Lori London asked details on the quake from U.S. Geological Survey geophysicist Paul Caruso.
It was right on the Iran-Iraq border. It was magnitude 7.3, so a very strong quake. And it was approximately 100 miles northeast of Baghdad.
Is that area, is it common to have earthquakes in that zone? I don't recall hearing much about any quakes in that area.
Absolutely. We do have a lot of quakes. Within 500 kilometers of this event, we've had 10 earthquakes larger than magnitude 6.5 since the year 1900.
Oh, wow. Okay. So would you consider, was this a pretty strong quake? 7.3 sounds strong, but I know it depends on how deep it is and shallow and...
Well, it was relatively shallow. We have a depth of 25 kilometers.
What kind of damage would that something like that do?
It can do considerable damage if it's near a city. For instance, the quake that hit Haiti back in 2010 was a very shallow quake. It was 10 kilometers.
Mm.
This is 25 kilometers, a little bit deeper. But sometimes we get quakes, you know, hundreds of kilometers deep. Those quakes don't cause nearly as much damage.
Do we know of any damage?
We don't get reports about damage or injuries here.
Okay.
We do get reports when people go to our website. They report that they felt the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we have a lot of people responding that they felt the earthquake throughout Iran, Iraq. Farthest away, I'm getting reports in Kuwait that people felt the earthquake, Syria, Lebanon, Israel,
oh, wow.
Saudi Arabia. This is a very strong quake, so it's felt throughout the Middle East.
Would it be likely this would do damage, or is it, like you said, it depends on, you know, how close it is to the proximity of a lot of buildings? If it were close to a lot of buildings, would it probably knock them down or just shake them?
It depends on how well the buildings are built. Different countries have different building codes and earthquake hazard areas.
Mm.
For instance, a country like Chile has very strong code, so we get big quakes there and does a lot less damage. If you go to our website, you can see the responses that we've had from people who felt the quake and how strongly they felt it.
So if you were close to that epicenter, would you likely feel a pretty big jolt?
Oh, yes. You would feel shaking. Our estimated duration for the shaking is about 20 seconds.
Hmm. I guess that can feel like a long time if you're shaking.
A small earthquake in California, people feel, you know, just a slight, you know, vibration, a few seconds. So this is, Yeah, 20 seconds of shaking, it's a strong quake, so that's people must have been pretty scared when they felt it.
That's Paul Caruso. He is a geophysicist at the U.S. Geological Survey, and he was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. There has been another earthquake, this one in Costa Rica. 6.8 magnitude quake struck off the coast near the capital, San Jose, late on Sunday. The U.S. Geological Survey says the quake, initially measuring at 6.7 magnitude, was centered 71 kilometers southwest of San Jose at a depth of about 10 kilometers. So far, no reports of damage or fatalities and injuries. Egypt remaining a destination and transit point for refugees and asylum seekers. While most of them have come from Syria, the numbers fleeing conflict and persecution in sub-Saharan Africa have also grown in recent years. In Cairo, Sophia Christensen reports on one Somali woman using art therapy to help herself and other refugees move on.
Aini Gal fled Somalia with her family in 2009 as government and regional forces battled al-Shabaab. She flew to Egypt and was granted refugee status in 2011. The sound of firecrackers can still scare her.
When we hear such a kind of, we remember a lot of what has happened. It revives, you know, the sound of the bullets and the sound of the explosion.
Just more than a third of the refugees and asylum seekers registered by the UNHCR in Egypt are of African origin, mostly from Sudan, Ethiopia, Eritrea, South Sudan, and Somalia. Since 2014, Egyptian artist John Millad has been offering psychological support. He and his team work with NGOs across the country to organize dance classes, drawing sessions, and theater workshops for refugees.
Well, the idea of the art therapy in general is that you try to transform the negative energy people have within, but either due to traumas or bad experiences they faced in their lives, and you try to provide a space where people can transform and to release this energy into something positive.
Aini continues to paint and encourages those around her to do the same.
This is my mother country, and this is where I live and all my parents here.
She completed her training as a trauma counselor and now runs weekly art therapy sessions at a local school for Somali children.
They picture many things. They picture how they want to be, what they want to be, what have passed. You know, even they are, you know, able to draw their past experience.
A safe haven where the children can communicate their anxieties and reconcile with the past. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Cairo.
And still ahead, some music just about everyone enjoys. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Did you ever have one of those days when you were feeling great, in a wonderful mood, and then you run into a couple of friends who were in a pretty bad mood? You quickly realize that that great feeling and good mood is suddenly gone. Now, a new study headed by researchers at the UK's University of Warwick suggests that there might be a connection between the effect of your friend's mood, whether good or bad, has on your own and on your network of friends. But the study also found that the effect of bad mood friends wasn't enough to push you or your friends into depression. Findings in the study were made after researchers analyzed data from a year-long study of U.S. adolescents. Researchers say they found evidence that suggests the spreading of a mood from person to person is done via a process known as social contagion. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. It is time now for the International Edition look at the world of music.
Let's get started right here. With a little Commodore, are you ready? You know it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. Wow, girl, I'm leaving you somebody.
seems to me, girl, you know I've done all I can. Wow, well, well. See a big soul, I'm borrowed. Get better now. Yeah.
Lionel Richie is an American singer, songwriter, actor, and record producer. Born in Tuskegee, Alabama in 1949, Richie began his career in 1968 as the lead singer of the funk and soul band, the Commodores.
Sounds good to me, y'all guys. Why in the world would anybody put chains on me? Well, well. Paid my dues to make it. Y'all help me right here when I say, everybody wants me to be what they want me to be. Can I get an amen from the band out there?
Amen.
I'm not happy when I'm trying to be that. Oh, no.
Richie launched a solo career in 1982, but not before racking up a number of big hits with the Commodores, including Sail On.
Sail on down the line, about a half a mile or so, and don't really want to know. Maybe once or twice, you see. Time after time, I try to hold on to what we got, but now you're going. And I don't mind about the things you're gonna say, Lord. I gave all my money and my time. I know it's a shame, but I'm giving you back your name. Guess I'll be on my way. I won't be back to stay. I guess I'll move along.
Lionel Richie has sold over 100 million records worldwide, making him one of the best-selling artists of all time. He's also a five-time Grammy Award winner, and in 2016, Richie received the Songwriters Hall of Fame's highest honor, the Johnny Mercer Award.
Doesn't matter. It was plain to see that small town boy like me just wasn't your cup of tea. I was wishful thinking.
Richie seriously considered studying divinity to become a priest in the Episcopal Church, but ultimately decided he was not priest material and continued to take to the stage with a hugely successful musical career. One of his biggest hits was All Night Long, which went to the top of the charts in 1983. It combined Richie's soulful Commodore style with Caribbean influences. Come on and sing along. All night long. quite an entertainer. It's hard to sit still. You want to sing and dance along with Lionel Richie. Listen, everyone, thanks for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. So good to have you with us. Up next is the latest world news, and we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a super Monday. Now a bit more from Lionel Richie.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On October 20th, the Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, liberated the city of Raqqa, ISIS's so-called caliphate in Syria. Throughout the nearly five-month-long campaign, the SDF received strong support from the U.S.-led Defeat ISIS coalition. Precision coalition air support and ground artillery enabled the SDF's advance throughout and minimized civilian casualties in the process, said Special Operations Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve Commander Major General James Gerard.
This multi-religious and multi-ethnic alliance of Kurds, Arabs, Assyrians, Yazidis, Armenians, and Turkmen, which also includes female fighters and commanders, overpowered an entrenched enemy and demonstrated courage and tenacity in the face of significant losses.
The false governance structures of ISIS were removed for good and the weakness of their military strength exposed, said General Gerard. While Raqqa has been liberated, life for its citizens will not be back to normal soon. People cannot return to their homes yet because Raqqa is still not safe for civilians. Although the city is void of ISIS fighters, hundreds and maybe even thousands of ISIS improvised explosive devices, or IEDs, bombs and booby traps, remain. Sadly, civilian deaths have already been reported among some of those who have tried to return, said General Gerard. The coalition's support to Raqqa continues with the whole-of-government effort, including our partners at Department of State and USAID. The coalition is supporting the Raqqa Civil Council, or RCC, the local governing body which is working to stabilize Raqqa. We also support the Raqqa Internal Security Force, or RISF, a local paramilitary force that has been established to provide local security and prevent ISIS reemergence, said General Gerard. The RISF answers to the Raqqa Civil Council and will eventually assume control of the city from the Syrian Democratic Forces. Internationally supported stabilization efforts are central to the enduring security and stabilization of life after ISIS, said General Gerard. We continue to work by, with, and through our partners to militarily defeat ISIS, and we will continue our efforts until the ISIS threat is permanently removed.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.